We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm up your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hello, CMOS Grizzlies. Welcome back to the podcast. I hope everyone had a lovely weekend. I am here with Kate. We're going to get into our intros. How are you doing, Kate?
Doing good. It's a Sunday night. Thank God it wasn't raining here in New York. I'm slowly getting back into running. I had to take a little bit of a hiatus from it just because my body was flaring up. And I'm about like 5 weeks away from running the marathon that I keep talking about in every pod intro, I feel like. So yeah, I took a break. I think mentally I needed a little bit of a break, but I definitely felt anxious about taking that time off. So I had my long run yesterday in the pouring rain, which was not cute. You know, then I ate a rotisserie chicken, took an edible, did all the CMOS girly healing things. That was pretty much my weekend. How about you?
Yeah, yesterday was pretty awful with the rain. I had swim lessons yesterday, which I've really, really been enjoying. And then today I had a really great swim, and just like swimming in general has been obviously something that I've been loving for a while, but I feel like more recently it's like really been something that I've been looking forward to. And I think just like the community aspect, just the group that I've been swimming with has like grown in so many ways in like these past, I don't know, 6-8 months. And then it's just like kind of beautiful to see like all these random people coming together to do something that we all have a common interest in. I always kind of joke around and say that like the group that I swim with, it's like a very dysfunctional family. And like individually, you would not ever expect us all to get along. But yeah, I've been feeling really strong in the water, which has been a great feeling. I've been lifting a lot more, which has also been a great feeling. And I think just kind of like focusing on, you know, feeling strong and like powerful in the water and in the gym has been like a good thing for me, like mentally. Not that I like have had like any bad thoughts about like body image or stuff. I just feel like I've noticed that I have been, you know, changing like as a woman, and like my body has changed with that. And I think it's like been a really beautiful process. And like, I've been honestly kind of accepting it and like enjoying it for like the first time probably in my life. And I'm sure anyone with any type of history with disordered eating, has had like, you know, similar experiences with your body changing and like kind of, I think releasing control can be really, really scary, but it's been honestly very empowerful this time around. And kind of connecting with that, I have a book recommendation, or at least a book that I read last week. It's called Deadweight by Emmeline Klein. And I guess like trigger warning, it is about like disordered eating and eating disorders. So if you're someone who does get triggered by that or is experiencing that, you know, I would maybe suggest not reading the book. I personally did not find it triggering whatsoever, but it's a nonfiction book, part memoir, and it really takes like a deep dive into like the medical and like cultural history of all eating disorders. So bulimia, binge eating, anorexia, orthorexia, and it references a lot of like stories from cultural icons. And it touches on, you know, like how today's feminism has been associated and influenced by disordered eating. And I just thought it was like such a powerful book. And a lot of her A lot of the studies that she references are a bit more modern, which I think makes it a little bit more relatable for our generation, just because a lot of, I feel like texts or articles that you read that do reference anything related to eating disorders or any studies around that, it's always like the Minnesota starvation diet or just like things that feel a bit antiquated. And yeah, it just takes like a really deep look into like how backwards treatment is, especially when compared to other mental disorders. So I feel like I just like learned a lot on like the medical side of disordered eating. And so I definitely encourage everyone to read it if you again are in a place where you think you can consume that type of information. But yeah, that's kind of like my one recommendation. I've been getting into reading again, which has been so nice for my brain.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like I might have to pick up the book. I've been kind of going to the bottom of my Goodreads list. I've been reading a book every week for like the YouTube series that I'm doing, and I'm kind of hitting a point where I don't have any recommendations. So if you're a CMOS girly, hit up my DMs with any books like fitness, nonfiction, politics, environmental stuff, feminism, etc. Happy to read. My recent fixation has been this crazy thing that I learned about over the weekend called the Barkley Marathon. And this is something that I didn't really know about prior to seeing it on my TikTok. And then one of my friends told me, like, there's this documentary and I'm going to watch it on Tuesday. Basically, it's this very unconventional, kind of untalked, like not talked about marathon that happens in Tennessee. And the course varies every single year. And it's decided by this old guy. And it's basically you do like five different loops. It's an ultra marathon. Also, I forgot to mention that. It's like a very long race. This year they finished in like 58 or 59 hours. So it consists of five different loops that are like 20 plus miles. And so it's this off trail course for a total of 100 miles. And most ultra distances tend to be in more of like the 50K to 100K, not the 100 mile category. So it's an extremely long distance. And this race has been going on for something like 40 years. And there only have been like 16 finishers. So there have been years when people don't finish. And some of the wacky rules of the road of like how this race starts, and once again, I haven't like watch the documentary yet, so I don't know the full lore, but what I've seen from TikTok is like the guy decides the race starts every year as he lights a pack of or like smokes a cigarette or something like that. That's how you know the race is going to start. The race has no like bibs or any sort of like televisation of the race going on. You run one lap around the course and he leaves like different books along the trail that you have to retrieve, and then you bring them back to him, and then you have to run the course the opposite direction. And if the first person decides it to run an opposite direction, like you have to follow them that way. And so it's like a really wacky race, and I just think it's super unconventional and very interesting. And I think it kind of blurs the lines between like performance in sport and also just like having fun and being playful with it. Like, it's such a fucking weird race that I think even for those who, let's say, don't have the fitness like myself to run at a 100 mile race, it's super cool to see people get through that and like mentally get through that. I think when I hear like road races that are like super long, they don't feel that inspiring, or especially if it's someone running at a super fast pace. But to see someone strategically get through this like crazy trail marathon, I feel like that's super inspiring, and I feel like there should be more of these like unconventional races. I think it would get more people into the sport. So I'm gonna watch the race. I think the documentary is called like What the Race That Eats Its Young or something like that. But I'll let you know how it is. And if the first woman ever finished this year, and it's yeah in rural Tennessee that this happens.
We're gonna have to definitely watch that. I am a huge documentary person, and same with Chris. And since he's a runner, I feel like he would appreciate that. So definitely some good recommendations. Today's podcast is another kind of hodgepodge episode. We're touching on a few different subjects, stuff related to like hormone balancing, some fitness stuff, gut health. So there's something for everyone in here. And Kate will call me back, and we'll get into it.
We'll get into it. As always, you can leave us your topics and suggestions for future pods, but I'll call Emma back and we'll get into this week's episode.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Our next partner is a product that Emma and I take every single day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted to find a greens powder that actually blended together. The taste is hands down the best greens powder I've been able to find. It even has a mild tropical taste, and you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, you name it.
For me, I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a supplement that actually tastes great. I've always known that taking a greens powder is a great addition to one's wellness routine, but I could just never get past the unpleasant taste. This completely changed once I started taking Athletic Greens. It tastes so good that I actually look forward to drinking it every morning, something I never knew was possible. Plus, Athletic Greens contains dairy-free probiotics, and let me tell you, my digestion has never been better.
Another thing that Emma and I love is that it's the one thing with the best things. Athletic Greens uses the best of best products based on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing.
It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster just like us, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance.
In today's podcast, we will be discussing all of the latest about health and wellness for Gen Z. That's why we're excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of CMOS for Elise.
Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EES System. If you haven't heard of the EES System, you'll want to listen up.
This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New York City or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable, which is perfect for all CMOS girlies.
If you're interested in experiencing the EES System technology for yourself, you can go to unifiedhealing.com/CMOS to learn more and find a center near you. That's UNIFYD healing.com/CMOS.
No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EES system. Okay, CMOS girlies, we're going to get into today's episode, and we're first going to talk a little bit about gut health and particularly like what it means to feed your gut. I think a lot of people who maybe aren't as privy to the health and wellness space, they see a lot of content and information about like gut health and taking a probiotic, and people decide to, you know, buy their probiotic, take that. And then that's sort of like the end of their gut health journey. And there's so much more to taking care of your gut. And it's actually such an important piece of our overall health. And there's so much more emerging, you know, science and studies that I think are really, really interesting, are pretty powerful. And I do feel like it's going to heavily influence how we think about, you know, diseases and how we diagnose and treat other type of medical conditions. And so we all know that like having a healthy and balanced gut can influence things such as like sleep, mental health, immune system, and metabolism. So it goes so much more farther than just simply your digestion and like how you're having bowel movements. We know about the gut-brain axis and the gut-skin axis, which basically, you know, we have our vagus nerve that essentially is allowing our gut and our brain to communicate with each other. And a lot of things that are going on in our gut can actually impact how our skin looks and feels, such as like eczema. And what a healthy gut really means is having like a diverse microbiota and like an equal balance of like this healthy bacteria in our gut. And there's a few ways that we're able to essentially support a healthy gut. And that's really coming from feeding your gut through probiotics and prebiotics. And when it comes particularly to consuming these probiotics or fermented foods, one thing to note is that like you have to eat them like fairly regularly. Granted, science has not indicated frequency or the amount that is like suggested for us to actually reap those benefits. I feel like I remember hearing from Andrew Huberman talking about having at least like 4 servings. I don't remember if it's like per day or per week. But you know, a lot of people probably have a random kombucha once a week, or will maybe have, you know, yogurt here and there. And like those kind of one-off situations really aren't going to do anything in terms of like adding good additional bacteria into your gut. And that's kind of something that Kate and I talk about a lot. And I think that's like sort of frustrating when it comes to health and wellness, is that people will just try to take things, you know, maybe for a few days, whether it's a supplement or like I said, a probiotic or eating a fermented food, and then they don't feel like they feel anything. And it's like, well, yeah, because you didn't give yourself enough time to A, experience any of those benefits, but also two, you weren't being regular and consistent with it. And you know, things that you can consume that do have a lot of probiotic rich bacteria. You know, there's sauerkraut, tempeh, there's yogurt, there's kefir. So there's like plenty of things for all types of people. And depending on what diet you have, you know, vegans can, you know, get fermented foods along with people who are maybe more, you know, a carnivore, if you will. And then when it comes to prebiotics, this is something that I think is like heavily overlooked. But these are certain plant fibers that the gut bacteria actually requires to actually be able to survive. And 95% of Americans fail to get their recommended daily value of fiber. And so I feel like this is kind of why we're seeing such a rise in like prebiotic sodas. And like I know Sakara just launched a fiber powder, because it's unfortunate that it's like so hard to get, you know, enough fiber in these days. And granted, that's likely due to just how we live in such like a convenience focused culture. So like, you know, people are never having time to really sit down and eat a meal or like make a healthy, nutritious meal. So people are just having, you know, meal replacement shakes or a protein bar, or, you know, just kind of grazing throughout the day versus like actually being able to eat a nutritious meal that has, you know, plenty of different plant fibers. And so, you know, foods that contain these prebiotic type of fibers, there are going to be apples, leeks, garlic, legume, and wheat. And so, like all plant foods or any food that does have fiber in it, those aren't all going to be prebiotic fibers, but all prebiotic fibers are fiber, which I know can be like a little confusing. But just because you're eating, I don't know, let's just say like jicama or kabocha squash, like that fiber in there, yes, it's like still very beneficial for your body, but those may not actually contain the prebiotic fibers that your gut bacteria actually requires and needs. And you know, when you're not eating any of this like good gut bacteria, and if you are eating food that is primarily, you know, something that leans more towards a standard American diet, you know, one that lacks fiber and is abundant in sugar and fats, these can actually lead to a fairly toxic environment for the bacteria in our gut, and we want that gut bacteria to survive. And the reason why, you know, prebiotics and just like, again, also like any fiber in general is so beneficial is just because our bacteria in the colon will feed off of these fermentable soluble fibers and create gut healthy metabolites such as like short chain fatty acids. And that's really what then influences our overall health. So yeah, I definitely recommend, you know, like buying a nice like fermented food that you actually enjoy. Like don't try to like slurp down kefir if you don't like the taste of it. There's so many different items out there. And if you look up a list of like prebiotic foods, I think just like picking and choosing a few that you know that you like and adding that to your grocery list. We also know that eating a diverse array of plant focused or like plant rich foods is one of the best ways to really diversify your gut microbiome, because you're getting so many different types of fibers. And so this is something that I've been trying to do, and I try to do regularly. Granted, it is like kind of hard when you're used to just like eating the same meals, or you just like don't want to think that hard when you're going to the grocery store. So I know I always tend to pick up the same bag of blueberries and like the same spring mix and like, you know, the cucumber and the beets. But I definitely encourage people, I think especially now that we're transitioning seasons, this is the perfect way to maybe introduce some other plant foods into your overall diet.
Yeah. And even if you don't shop at the farmer's market, like for me, I could not buy all of my produce there. That's like a good way to check in to go see what produce is in season. Like if you don't know, I mean, you also can Google that, but I just think it's really nice to go see like all the new, like beautiful produce and kind of transition into the spring, like Emma said. The main thing I'm going to talk about today is losing and gaining fitness. I think I've gotten those questions in my own personal social media as I've gone through like another injury and kind of like, it's a very common experience for runners. And I think, you know, Emma is a swimmer, so an endurance athlete as well. I think a lot of people that may be content creators that you follow, like, probably don't post if they're going through pain and injury. Because as I've posted about it, I feel like a lot of people have messaged me, like, I feel really alone that I have an injury or whatever. And in reality, like, most people are going to be battling some sort of pain throughout their running career. So, first of all, it's like not to normalize it, but just to make you feel like it's okay to have some sort of pain. So I think when it comes to gaining fitness, like let's say you just started running or you just started at the gym, what is realistic to expect to see results in your own fitness? Because I feel like social media is full of clickbait content and quick fixes, but different people are going to gain muscle or lose muscle or atrophy or detrain at different rates. And this is going to depend on genetics, your lifestyle, nutrition, your fitness background. So if you just got into running, or let's say you got injured and you have like a year of running experience under your belt, like what's going to happen? I would say look at it in weeks and months versus days. It's really easy to get fixated on having a bad run or a bad day at the gym or one run where something is off versus like if you have that consistent pain over months or weeks, that's something to really take account for. And so let's say you are injured or you're sick or maybe you're taking time off, like when are you going to start to lose progress? There's a few interesting things to think about here. One is that stress is going to show up in the body in multiple ways. So whether it's from that intentional physical exertion, your exercise, your daily run, or personal circumstances, let's say you're going through loss, grief, financial stress, moving, family drama, et cetera. Like if you're going through something in your life, whether it is physical or personal, you're probably going to start to feel burnt out when you do go to work out. And I think it's really easy for us to just drink caffeine and push through it and, push through the pain. But you're going to notice little things creep up over time. And I think unless you're really body aware, which is something that I've grown to be over the past 2 years or so, I think a lot of people don't have a general sense of what your body feels like. And I think that's a superpower that I want the CMOS release to really take accountability for. Like, what does my body feel like on an average day? What does my body feel like on an average run or an average lift or the day after I run or the day after I lift? Because once you start to have those baselines, I think it becomes much easier to navigate pain and injury and become a better advocate for yourself and step in when it's on the early side of it becoming an injury versus it being far too late and you being sidelined for a few months. So let's say you are experiencing some weird pain in the body. Maybe it is too much for you to be working out if you're going through grief, if you're going through loss. There are plenty of times when I was running right after my dad passed where I could not pick up my legs. Like they felt like bricks and I was always confused, like why am I losing this fitness? In reality, I was going through something extreme, like an extreme loss in my life. That's why my body's not working. So make sure you're paying attention to like what's happened in your personal life as well as what you're doing during your workouts. But when it comes to cardio versus strength, it's going to be a bit different when it comes to losing fitness. And I think runners freak out a lot of like, I missed a run, I missed two runs, I missed three runs. And I know people that lift do freak out as well, but I do think it is a very specific thing to running culture to like freak out if you have time off. I think you're so used to having it as an outlet, like speaking as a runner, you're so used to having that time by yourself. Maybe you are on a schedule with a deadline to have a marathon like in a few weeks. But it is really important to listen to your body when nagging pain does come up. But cardiovascular fitness starts to noticeably decrease after about 2 weeks of you doing nothing, being sedentary. So let's say you're still going on walks. Let's say you're still able to kind of go through your daily life. You're not going to lose like your general like will to get through your routines and your daily life, unless you're completely sidelined, crutches, boot, wheelchair situation, like you'll be fine. And this loss of fitness and endurance probably starts to happen as little of 12 days after nose exercise. After this literature review studied a bunch of athletes in 2020. And they found that these runners that participated in the 2016 Boston Marathon, after they ran the race, they dropped from about 30 miles a week to 3 or 4 miles a week. Their cardio fitness dropped significantly, which I feel like would be obvious to everyone, right? When you go from running at a certain threshold to not running as much, your body's going to be less like adaptable to that exertion over time. But when adults took a month off of their regular cardio routine for about, or a month to about 4 months, they lost almost all of their aerobic fitness during that time. And so that's to say, like, you probably will lose a lot of that aerobic fitness. And I feel like me saying that out loud as someone who had to take 2 months off of running, it's really hard to hear. And I remember those first runs when I did return to running, feeling like they were the most impossible thing. Staying on my feet for more than 5 minutes felt uncomfortable. It felt scary. I felt like I was going to re-injure myself. But I think a really beautiful upside to this is that when you do go through this process of gaining fitness again, if you had been running and let's say you have an injury come up, your body knows how to run. How fast is it going to get back to running and running how you want to run? That's going to be the question mark. But you have the mechanics down. Like it's kind of like you don't forget how to ride a bike, like you will remember how to run, especially since running is so interlinked with like primary movements of running, lunging, walking, et cetera. I meant walking and lunging, sorry. But yeah, your body will come back, even though you feel like you are losing so much of this aerobic gains. And when it comes to strength, your body can maintain its like overall strength composition for up to 3 weeks. So that is a little bit different than the aerobic capacity, which is like a good thing. Let's say you take time off lifting, or like if you're me as a runner, I'm probably not going to lift like the 2 weeks before I run a race. And that's like a good sign that my strength will be able to maintain itself. And from a strength perspective, your muscles were going to actually store memory on a molecular level from these past resistance trainings for up to 20 weeks. So even if you're not doing the movements and you might feel clunky and like you lost fitness, your body's still going to remember how to do a squat, how to do a lunge, how to do a bicep curl. So once you get back in there, it might feel tough to do the weights, but your body will still remember like what to do. And in these first, let's say, 3 to 5 days off of running, as an example, I think a lot of runners start to feel like you lose a lot of fitness and worry and you lose this confidence. There's little to no loss of fitness from any of the key cardiovascular measures during this time. They've measured people on their cardiac output and also their VO2 max, and it remains the same after that 3 to 5 day period time. So let's say you're experiencing a weird thing in your hip and it's been there for like a week. If you take 3 to 5 days off of that, which might seem like a very long time, your cardiovascular fitness is not going to change. So I say take the 3 to 5 days off. I did that last week. It definitely will help clear a lot of that inflammation in the body. And a handful of days off, let's say before a race, are actually going to make you fitter and stronger because your body can finally absorb that hard training. I think running is a really easy sport to get into overtraining because you are banging on the same muscles every day. It's not like you can go isolate, I'm going to do arms today, abs tomorrow. And so when you do take short periods of time off, your body can sit and rest and actually reap the benefits of you doing those hard workouts. So, like, let's say you got a cold and you have to take 3 days off or something, like, you are so fine. And when you're injured, your body needs time to repair. I've said this before, but like, your body needs equal, if not more, calories to repair that broken tissue and muscle fiber. So make sure that you're not eating just because you think, oh, I'm not working out today. And wait until you are pain-free to return to movement. I think this is a issue that a lot of runners deal with, like thinking I'm cleared and then you're not. It's going to be the biggest sign that your body's actually healed on like a muscle level when you don't have pain when you're returning to workouts. And when we try to push through workouts when we're injured, your body's in overdrive because one, it's trying to repair the torn muscle, the inflamed joints, et cetera. But two, it's also trying to gain muscle at the same time. You are requiring it to have so much output. And I think it's impossible to do both at the same time. And I think also when you're running through an injury, it may lead to a weird running gait or how you run. Like your form might be awkward. Your feet might be a little bit off. You might like not be able to get into a smooth rhythm with it. When you have a weird gait, it can tend to compromise your form, and stronger parts of your body are going to take over for the weaker parts, and it can lead to further imbalances. Like when I had my stress fracture in my knee, my steps didn't sound like one, two, one, two. They sound like one, two, one, two, one, two. And my left glute started to hurt so bad because of this compromised gait. So it's really important to make sure you are cleared and pain-free, preferably off of like a doctor or physical therapist guiding you down that path. And also taking rest after a race. Like let's say you just finished up your first half marathon or marathon. You really need that break. You're not going to lose any fitness in that period off. It can take up to 4 weeks for your body to fully recover physiologically from massive aerobic exercise or, a half or a full marathon. And I think one of the hardest aspects of this extended break from running is losing a pattern or a rhythm of training or maybe a routine you have. And I think for me, when I like after the marathon, instead of my morning runs, I would just go on morning walks for 30 minutes. Maybe I would stretch in my apartment and then I would do the same things that I would do just to feel like I had a sense of my own like pattern in life. Walking is good, stretching is good, biking and swimming are good as like low impact stuff. And I think when you're running or let's say doing some activity that is primarily like one muscle group, maybe if you're injured and you can't use your legs, you could get a really strong core or you could lift upper body. Like there's still opportunities for you to maybe gain fitness or gain like movement skills, but make sure you're not like pushing into what is causing injury. And overall, like wrapping a bow on this, exercise is a stressor. It breaks your body down in the moment, and the gains that you need in this growth phase don't happen until you stop exercising. So you really have to make sure you're giving yourself adequate time to adapt to that stress. And once you allow yourself to adapt to that stress, gain your aerobic base, that's going to be the only time that running gets easier and you start to run faster or you feel like you are able to run longer distances. And I think any fitness that you lose during an injury, during an illness, whatever, it'll come back quickly once you start training again. You're not going to lose any sort of long-term gains that you have in just like a couple of weeks. So please take it easy on yourself. And most athletes are really able to get back to peak fitness more quickly than you think, just because you had already been doing it. Maybe you got a stress fracture, did this. Like after my stress fracture, I came back running even stronger. And I don't want to seem like my case was an anecdote because most of the research here suggests that you're going to be fine. You'll come back and you'll be much stronger after.
I think when you like hear about the science of, what happens when you do take time off, it can be actually very comforting. I know a lot of us are probably type A and we like to be in control. So when we are unable to be in control and if there's something that we love, such as exercise, and we're like forced to take, a few days, weeks, or months off, whatever it may be, you may feel like that things are out of control and that, the worst thing is going to possibly happen because we all probably think, in black and white. But like hearing this, I think it is actually like very empowering to know that like my body is like smart and strong and it's not going to fail me. And I even feel like with swimming, I stopped swimming when I was in a sophomore in high school, and I didn't get back into the pool until I was probably like 21, 22. So I took a good like 5 years off from swimming. And once I got back into it, that was like the first time that I was actually like fairly serious about working out. Like, of course, I was like lifting and doing Pilates, but I was never like super consistent with any of like my workout plans. I was just kind of messing around and seeing what I really enjoyed. And what really shocked me with swimming is that, I expected myself to be like so slow, like an awful swimmer. I thought I was gonna have to like reteach myself everything, but I really did not lose like any of the technique, which kind of goes back to Kate's point about like the muscle memory component, but also too like my endurance. Yes, it was like not super strong, but within like a month or two, it was like almost back to like when I was at my prime or at least like fairly close. And so I think that just kind of goes to say that like our bodies are so smart and it's really, really easy to snap back into it. And it can kind of be like a fun challenge to get back into fitness and like experience those like newbie gains, something that I know Kate was mentioning and talking about last pod or maybe the pod before that. And so there's always like a silver lining, I think, with any of these, situations that you may be in when it comes to exercise. The last topic for today is going to be about like hormone balancing diets. This is something that I've sort of have wanted to discuss just because I think it's still fairly prevalent on like social media and, TikTok, Instagram. I know it's also talked about a decent amount on other podcasts. And I think the things that I wanted to really look into when it comes to like hormone balancing diets is like, A, is it too good to be true? And like, how accurate are these hormone balancing diets? Just because I think a lot of the conversation that we do see on TikTok, it's primarily by, influencers, is that they make like very big statements about like, I balance my hormones and suddenly lost 40 pounds. And I think like a lot of women that do kind of try to experiment with these hormone balancing diets and the content that they put out on social media, for the most part, it's like innocuous, but I think it's also a very thin line. Many women talk about things such as like bloating and puffiness before they started this like quote unquote hormone balancing diet. And I think when we use this type of verbiage, it just kind of further sustains this narrative that like in the societal belief that like women must look a certain way and that we must prove our health and wellness through external like factors through, looking thin and like not having any blemishes on our skin. And it's like, no, you can still like have very healthy and functioning hormones while also being in a bigger body or having blemishes on your skin. And I think that's something that's been like a very frustrating thing as I've consumed this content. And I'm sure so many other girls have had this belief and maybe this feeling as well. But when it comes to like hormones and hormone balancing diets, like our hormones are constantly in flux. And so like especially for those who menstruate, so like we're always going to be seeing changes in our estrogen and progesterone levels. So given like that, as a fact, like there's never really going to be a diet that quote unquote like balances and makes all of our hormones necessarily like equal to each other, because we're always going to be having these hormones that are in flux. And like, yes, of course, you should strive for like healthy levels or a balance between estrogen and progesterone, because we know that, if we're too high in estrogen or too high in progesterone, this can cause, other hormonal related health, I don't want to call diseases, but you know, like PCOS and amenorrhea. These are all related to hormonal imbalances, and these are actually diagnoses that have clear indicators and symptoms that professionals can actually identify versus like bloating or puffiness that can be related to so many other like factors that may not even be actually tied to your hormones at all. And yes, of course, there's like ways to support our hormones through eating, but we're all such unique individuals that there's never going to be like a one size fits all approach. But I think there are general protocols or guidelines that we can all, you know, take and kind of tweak with and play around with and see what works best for us. I think like the biggest thing is that like you need to actually be eating like enough and like sufficient amount of calories. I think when you see a lot of these what I eat in the day videos, you know, yes, the meals are very healthy, but I sometimes question, I'm like, is this actually like all the food that they're eating? And of course, like everyone's going to have like different, you know, hunger levels. And, you know, I'm an athlete, so I know that I have to generally eat more than probably like, you know, someone who's a bit more sedentary, but they are very, very restrictive in the food that is typically shown in these videos. And I know we've talked a lot about this in so many different podcast episodes, but like when we aren't eating enough, you know, our proper hypothalamus function and hormone production is, you know, really required when we have sufficient calories. And so, you know, when we're not eating enough, it kind of can signal our body that, hey, this is not like a safe time to reproduce. And that's typically when you see a loss of your menstrual cycle. And if you go like 3 to 4 months without, you know, menstrual cycle, that basically puts you in this camp of amenorrhea, and that can have like so many negative health consequences down the line that a lot of girls definitely don't think about. Another, you know, protocol that you can kind of take into consideration and incorporate into your own personal diet is like making sure that you're eating plenty of fat. Our bodies actually make hormones from fat. So, you know, making sure you're eating your olive oil, avocados, nuts, seeds, what have you, and not eliminating any macro food group. These macro nutrients are macronutrients for a reason, because they are like the main, you know, types of, you know, sources that are required for energy. So our body needs, you know, equal amounts of like protein, fats, and carbs in order to like actually, you know, function and live. And I think another too, like when it comes to this conversation about hormone balancing diets, is that there's so many other lifestyle factors that can impact our hormones. So stress, exercise, sleep. So food really is not the one and only thing. And I think people, again, always kind of forget that like our it's like a web when it comes to our overall health, and everything is intertwined. So if you're like hyper focused on your like, you know, food and what you're eating and making that like as perfect as possible, that can also be causing you to experience a lot of stress, just because you're constantly thinking about, you know, what I have to eat next and planning out your next meal, and like maybe saying no to other social obligations because you know that like they're not going to have foods that fit into like what you should be eating during your follicular phase. And that can cause general stress. And we know that like high levels of stress and cortisol also wreaks havoc on female hormones. And I just think it's hard when influencers make such statements, and whether it's like a micro influencer or major influencer or really anyone in the space, just because it erodes the credibility in the health space, especially, you know, the alternative medicine health space. And just because people have big followings does not mean that they're experts. I think it's very easy for a lot of us to idolize a lot of people that we see on social media just because they feel relatable. So it feels like that we can really trust what they're saying, almost as if they're like our friend. And I just think that you should always take things with a grain of salt and just kind of like always question and ask. You know, a lot of these people are never talking about, hey, what hormones they're specifically like trying to balance out. And they're not really talking about any sort of like metric that they're utilizing as a benchmark. You know, so many people probably are not getting regular blood work where they're able to see, you know, their full hormone panel of, you know, how much estrogen, progesterone, et cetera, that they may have in their bodies. And, you know, I think it's really easy for all of us to self-diagnose ourselves just because we're bombarded with content 24/7. And really, it's like as long as you're getting your period every single month on a regular basis, then like you're healthy and fine. And you can be getting your period, you know, even if you're having, you know, more indulgent snacks or if you're not exercising that much. And I think just people like need to simplify their lives a lot. And this is like, A, the first time kind of in my life where I feel like I've simplified my life and I haven't been like so freaking like anal and like type A when it comes to like all things health and wellness. And it's been just so nice just to like live. And, you know, I think it's just like silly when I see sometimes these like, these are foods to eat in your follicular phase. And it's like, there's just really not enough science for us to know that like eating brown rice during days like 1 through 7 is going to, you know, result in this type of benefit versus like if you were to eat like, I don't know, like whole grain or like oats during this time of your period. And granted, I know we've talked about seed cycling. I still think that, you know, seed cycling can be great. And I think like yes, there's still, positives that come to like this conversation about hormone balancing diets. It's making women more and more aware of their menstrual cycles and learning more about this like mind body connection. But again, I think with all things in health and wellness, it's such a fine line. And I do worry that when young girls see this type of content, it could lead just to potential, strict or orthorexic behaviors.
Yeah, and also just really time consuming and expensive to be like eating differently every single week. I know I get that question a lot with marathon training, and I feel like it would be very cool to like put women in a clinical trial to do this thing, like to do a hormone balancing diet. But like Emma mentioned in her section, like we don't have the research on it. So I feel like the CMS girlies, you guys are probably so a-okay with what you're eating, how you're moving, etc. But we hope you enjoyed the pod. Those are the topics for this week. Next week, who knows? I'm gonna go get an Epsom salt bath for the evening. You got any fun plans over there?
I'm probably going to take the Theragun to my legs. They're feeling quite tight just from like lifting and swimming, and
Nice.
then likely going to have some scoops of Alex ice cream, which is this like regenerative like A2 dairy ice cream that they sent Kate and I a few pints, and so I've been trying each flavor each day, and I don't know which one is my favorite because they're all so freaking good. But today I had the Palm Springs banana date shake or something along those lines, and oh my God, it is like mind-blowing. So I definitely recommend trying to find that ice cream if it is available at a grocery store near you.
Yeah, we love Alex. Thanks for the fresh ice cream. I need to do an ice cream taste test soon as well. But that was the pod for this week. We hope you girlies enjoyed. We'll be on the meme page if you need us, but we'll talk to you girlies next Tuesday.